back to Consider This. Melissa and Sherrod here with you. Now, 5 years after the federal court found him guilty for murder, former commando Azila Hadri has now laid the blame for the 2006 killing of Altan Tuya Sharibu at the feet of Dato' Sri Najib Razak. Now, this is stated in his statutory declaration dated 17th October 2019. So today, the federal court has fixed April 20th, 2020, for the hearing of Azila's application for a review of his conviction and death sentence over Altan Tuya's murder. To help us unpack the legal implications of this, we have joining us on the line, Arik Zakri, practicing lawyer and former deputy public prosecutor. Arik, thank you for joining us on the line. Now, can you help us understand the legal implications of Azila's statutory declaration?
A statutory declaration is, under law, basically a statement made out of court by a person to a person who can receive this statement, a commissioner for oath. And whatever he says, this can be receivable in court. So the implication is that basically he runs the risk of perjuring himself. That really is the ultimate risk for himself. And he is taking this risk by coming up with this new series of allegations. That's the implication on him. Right. The implication on the process, as is that, well, I'm not saying it's a risk, but yeah, it is a risk, isn't it?
That, okay, Arik, can we go back to the question of perjury here? You're saying he runs the risk of perjuring himself because he did not mention this as a material fact in the case. In a case that is well known for the fact that the men who confessed to the murders didn't in fact have, or seemingly have, a motive.
Yes, as found by the trial judge, motive is not essential to proving the murder case. However, I think a lot of us were thinking, you know, why would police officers want to take the deceased to the forest and take her down, somebody who they don't even know? There must have been some kind of motive. So, yeah, his SP conveniently supplies his motive as that of basically being superior orders. That's what it is.
Mm. Now, go ahead, Sherrod.
Well, so the question is, now that he has a review, now, the fact is, even if it turns out that the court recognizes that this is new material evidence, does it in any way affect the sentence? Because he is not saying that he did not murder her, and that still stands, right? Because he did in fact murder her, doesn't his death sentence stand? Does it change that material fact?
Okay, you're asking more than one thing. Can I try to go one by one?
Sure.
Okay, firstly, we have this principle of the integrity of the judicial process. And secondly, we have this finality of judgment. So after you have lost the case all the way to the federal court, it's not that easy for you to just come up with something new. You pull something out of a rabbit's hat and you say that everything I said over the last few years and all the statements that I made, all the positions I made, were all phony. But you come up with something new. It's not really that easy. We have this finality of the judgment. And a judgment can only be set aside very, very difficult. It has to have been, as I understand it, have been procured by fraud. It's one of the ideas. But after having undergone the entire process, it's very blue moon, you know. It's very uncommon.
Okay.
So how did it affect his process, his sentence? Even if he had introduced this defense of superior orders earlier on, hypothetically, I don't think it's necessarily that something that easy for him.
Can I just clarify one thing? So earlier you said that Azila runs the risk of perjuring himself, yes? Would that in any way jeopardize future testimony from him?
In my opinion, it would go to the weightage as to how his future testimony may be considered in any hypothetical cases or scenarios. Because the fact is, he's given conflicting evidences on oath in the past. So that is under our civil law system. If we look at, for example, Islamic fiqh, it will be rejected outright. I mean, some school of thought. You've lied once, your testimony is rejected from then on. Mm. In our civil law system, I really don't know how this has panned out. I've not handled this kind of case before.
Right. So then what do you make of the federal court's decision, Azik, to hear Azila's application for the review of his conviction and his death sentence next year?
To me, I don't think really there's really much to be excited about. I mean, I think it's an administrative thing that they want to fix dates, just like dates are fixed by the federal court and court of appeal, you know, all the time. It doesn't mean that there's any merit to his application, you know, and let's see how they handle this.
I think there's this other thing, of course, there's been a lot of criticism in the past about the particular trial, the trial that led to the conviction of those two men and their sentencing. What do you make of that? Because there seems to be a political context in which the trial, you know, proceeded. And also, of course, implications for the integrity of the judiciary, for the both the prosecutor, prosecution as well as the defense.
You've got to say that right, Sharad. Mm-hmm. You've got to say that right, the prosecutor.
Yes. So the question is, if there was a criticism, I mean, do you think that changes anything? We've had a change of government. The person who is considered to be the mastermind, or alleged to be the mastermind, it was in power, no longer is in power. All these, are these material facts for the courts to take into consideration?
My only concern as just an observer is why Razak Baginda's appeal did not proceed. That's the only bit. As for the way the rest of the trial went, again, as just an observer and somebody who read the judgment, just as a bystander, I mean, they've had all avenues open to them. They had very able counsel, several counsel at several stages. They had 2 tiers of appeal. You know, so I can't really remark outwardly anything substantively outwardly wrong for them. I just wonder why they didn't proceed with Razak Baginda's appeal.
All right, Azik, as an outside observer, what was your initial reaction when news of this statutory declaration broke? I mean, I'm just wondering whether the timing of it is at all relevant.
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, you have SDs coming out here and there, here from this Rauser guy out of left field. You know, God knows what other SD is coming out tomorrow. So there's just such a saturation of political outlandishism. We feel tired and fatigued, you know.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight, Azik.
And now, get some rest.
We'll be back with more on Consider This in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.